but we move forward.
And choosing A Wrinkle in Time?
A Wrinkle in Time, you know the book. It's a book that captured my imagination when I read it. It's a story of a girl traveling the universe in search of her father, and in doing so she finds herself a true heroine, a mix of social commentary and science and spirituality, and who doesn't want to get their hands in that? So I'm very grateful and having a good time.
Well, we're very grateful for your work. We want to thank you so much for spending this time. Ava DuVernay, director of 13th. It is up for an Oscar with her previous film, Selma. Ava DuVernay became the first African-American female director to have a film nominated for Best Picture at the Academy Awards. Now, 13th is nominated for an Oscar for Best Documentary. It's shortlisted for an Oscar for Best Documentary. That does it for our broadcast. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wilsler, Agata Dean, Dina Gester, Sam Malkoff, Ravi, Karen, Honey Masood, Turiya Nadura, Andre Lewis. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
KBOO Portland. The time is now 5 p.m. And coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Work Group meets the first Thursday of each month at 7:30 p.m. Please call 231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held. To request notice of board meetings in writing, please email monica@kboo.org.
Give to KBOO today during our end-of-year match. Wrapping up December 31st, donations from all new and increasing members will be matched one-to-one up to $15,000 from the Collins Foundation and SSI Shredding Systems. Give an extra gift today or become a new member and your membership will be doubled to support independent community media and citizen journalism at KBOO. Thank you.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Don't Shoot Portland is hosting its first New Year's Eve party.
The Standing Rock water protectors have asked for help after being hit by a blizzard with 40 inches of snow.
And Northwest folk musician and grassroots activist David Rovix is launching a world tour featuring his newest political work.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, December 30th, 2016. I'm Linda Olson-Osterlund.
And I'm Liam Delta. Don't Shoot Portland is hosting its first annual New Year's Eve party. The family-friendly event is intended to provide a safe place for family while encouraging community involvement. KBOO's Ray Bodwell spoke to one of the event organizers.
My name is Martha Zimmerman, and I work with the Communications Committee for Don't Shoot Portland. We are holding a family-friendly New Year's Eve party at Fifth Avenue Cinema, and we're doing that to just try and build a greater community here in Portland. And we wanted to really reach out to families and children so we can get a younger group of people involved. Our event is focusing mainly on art and how you use art in protest and how art can be protest. So we're going to be organizing for our upcoming events. We have a Martin Luther King Jr. March scheduled. So we're going to be making signs for that with all the children that will be there. We're going to be creating mannequin challenges to use in some sort of action when we are out for our Martin Luther King March. And we're going to be having movie screening for the 5 hours we're there, music and open mic for anyone who wants to share any music they have, any spoken word pieces they have created. So really we're just focusing on creation with children being our main focus.
Is this the first time that Don't Shoot PDX has actually put on this kind of a New Year's event?
Yes, this is our first New Year's Eve event.
How have you been communicating about this?
We have a Don't Shoot Portland newsletter that has gone out. I have contacted some different news outlets, and this is actually the first interview I've done about it, so this is how we're trying to get the word out.
Who's invited and who's not invited?
We haven't excluded anyone. Anyone who would like to be there is definitely invited. What we've done is just sent out an invite on Facebook, so anyone who follows the Don't Shoot Portland Facebook page or likes it will see that event, and so anyone is invited.
How does this support the Don't Shoot PDX cause or the Don't Shoot Portland cause? Is there an overriding theme, or is this just meant to be more of a safe location for a party?
It is both. So Don't Shoot Portland's overriding theme is an educational look at protest and community action. So we're using this as a tool to educate families and community members, but also provide a safe space for families to come together and build a greater sense of community. Yeah, that's really, I just want everyone to have a great time when they come out. It starts at 8 o'clock, and there'll be food and lots of fun to be had. Location will be at the Fifth Avenue Cinema, which is located at 510 Southwest Hall Street, and from 8 p.m. to 1 a.m. And if you'd like to find out more, you can go to the Don't Shoot Portland Facebook page, and it'll be under the events tab.
Thank you so much, Martha. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
On Wednesday, President Barack Obama designated two new national monuments, one in Utah and the other in Nevada. The Golden Butte National Monument in the Nevada desert protects 300,000 acres. The Bear's Ears National Monument in Utah covers more than 1.3 million acres and protects important Native American cultural sites. It will be jointly managed by a coalition of five Native American tribes. During a Wednesday press conference, Russell Begay, president of the Navajo Nation, stated that, quote, "The place of my ancestors will now be preserved for all future generations," end quote. The designations brought predictable responses from Western state Republicans. Utah Senator Orrin Hatch called the move on an egregious abuse of executive power and an attack on an entire way of life. Obama's move is the latest in a series of actions to nail down his environmental legacy before Trump is inaugurated. Trump has pledged to remove many environmental regulations to drilling and mining and has promised to undo much of Obama's environmental agenda.
Northwest folk musician and grassroots activist David Rovix is launching a world tour this coming year featuring his newest political work. Rovix was last on the KBOO News when he wrote a song about affordable housing and played it in front of City Hall for weeks. Now Rovix says he hopes his music will inspire a new generation of activists around the world, and he's kicking off the new recordings with a New Year's Day house party streamed live on Periscope. KBOO's Lisa Loving spoke with Rovix and his baby son this morning about why music matters in social change.
People are basically like, people are... Our tribal creatures, we are group-oriented animals, and we need each other. We need human interaction in order to survive, and certainly in order to be happy. And music is so central to human interaction. We are fundamentally musical creatures. Our cells are making music. As you know, as soon as they exist, you know, we've been making music forever as a species. It's part of who we are, and there are recent scientific studies that show something that musicians have always known, which is that when you sing a song, it goes to different parts of your brain than when you speak, and you understand it much better when it's sung. And it can have a far greater emotional impact when the words are sung, that they're understood differently and better. And they're much more memorable. There's a lot of ways that we learn things through songs that we don't learn through other means. And there's a lot of ways that musical events, performers, but also just people coming together for musical gatherings or concerts or other kinds of events, that fosters a sense of community And that sense of community is essential to maintaining any kind of a social movement. Social movements breathe optimism. Optimism is the oxygen of any social movement. There needs to be a constant sense of optimism. Otherwise, the movement will collapse. And you need ways to maintain that sense of optimism, and music is the number one way to maintain that sense of optimism.
For KABU News, I'm Lisa Loving.
And that was David Rovics. You can catch his new music on Periscope New Year's Day. That's David, R-O-V-I-C-S.
The number of Americans in prison or on parole has fallen to its lowest level since 2002, according to a federal report issued on Thursday. Approximately 6.7 million people are listed as in jail, on parole, or in probation, with 2.2 million actually in prison. That number represents about 2.7% of the population, or about one of every 37 adult Americans. This is actually a far higher rate than in most of the world, but represents the lowest percentage in the United States since 1994. And although the rate of imprisonment for African Americans and Latinos dropped by 4% and 5% respectively, they both remain dramatically higher than for white adults. The rate of imprisonment for black adults is twice as high as for Latinos and over 5.5 times higher than whites. The report noted that 50% of prisoners in federal prison are there for drug crimes and only 7% for violent crimes, while in state prisons the numbers were practically reversed. 53% were in for violent crimes and 16% for drugs. The U.S. has one of the highest incarceration rates in the world, and while the United States represents only about 4.4% of the world's population, it houses around 22% of the world's prisoners.
Many Americans committed to staying fit and losing weight at the beginning of 2016, but found it hard to keep their resolution. The Oregon News Service and KABU's Khalid Musli share some tips on how to keep those resolutions in 2017.
The most popular New Year's resolution last year involved staying fit and losing weight. And chances are good that many people are setting up the same goals again. The psychology of motivation may hold the answer to how people could keep their resolutions in 2017. Elliot Berkman, an associate professor of psychology at the University of Oregon, says it's important to start with a goal that is less abstract and more actionable than just staying healthy, and to start on it as soon as possible.
What you want to do is to get those immediate reinforcements as early as you can. So it's kind of classic advice, and it's good advice to start small and to make sure to reinforce each little step.
According to Nielsen study, 43% of people said they planned to lose weight at the beginning of the year by eating healthier, but where the 75% not followed the healthy diet or weight loss program the year before, so hadn't developed the healthy habits necessary for success. Berkman says this could be the hardest problem. A person's habitual behavior, which may not involve regular visits to the gym, is the easiest to fall back on. Falling through on a New Year's resolution means rewiring the brain for a new habit, literally. Berkman says people are better off doing something they like and connecting the habit to something bigger.
Maybe it's connecting it to your family or your work or earning money. Whatever is the thing that you really care about, find the way that that new goal is connected to that, and that's going to also serve as a reinforcement for it.
Technology also can be used to keep people motivated. Berkman says at the University of Oregon Social and Effective Neuroscience Lab where he works, he and other researchers are using text messaging to remind people of their goals. He says abstract goals can be hard to keep in mind all day, especially when concrete and temptations exist all around.
It helps combat fire with fire a little bit to get those texts in your daily life. And so you don't need to go out of your way to remember why you care about losing weight or exercising more. We're going to remind you, and we'll do it in your own words.
For KB News and the Oregon News Service, I'm Khalid Musli. Have a good day.
Blizzards and power outages across North Dakota have prompted the Standing Rock Water Protectors to issue a disaster declaration asking for help from federal and state agencies. A storm on Christmas Day caused, quote, massive disruptions of the normal flow of emergency, business, and other vital transportation, end quote. The declaration signed by Chairman Dave Archibald II said hazardous travel conditions continue in the area where an estimated 40 inches of snow is on the ground. Hundreds of households lost power for about 16 hours due to the storm on Christmas Day.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, Hard Knock Radio, news, views, and hip-hop. Tomorrow's weather in Portland, partly cloudy with a high about 40, and possibility of late afternoon or evening showers. East of the Cascades, partly cloudy with temperatures in the low 40s. On this date in 1803, the United States took possession of Louisiana from France at a ceremony in New Orleans. The territory included land from 15 present U.S. states. The quote of the day is from the Shawnee leader Tecumseh. He said, "Sell a country. Why not sell the air, the great sea, as well as the earth? Did not the Great Spirit make them all for the use of his children?"
We hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
Workers' Independent News Week in Review. I'm Doug Cunningham. The nation's largest nurses union is calling on the Senate to reject the nomination of Representative Tom Price, Donald Trump's choice for Secretary of Health and Human Services. Joanne Powers reports.
Here's National Nurses United spokesperson Charles Eidelson.
Our union represents registered nurses. They are the canaries in the coal mine, the ones who see the effects of the horrific priorities of this nation. They see people all the time who are continuing to suffer from the ongoing consequences of a healthcare system that's based on ability to pay and profiteering and not on patient need. The Price nomination will make that crisis for so many people far worse.
$2 million a day. That's how much Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner wants to fine AFSCME. Angry that AFSCME Council 31 went to the state courts to block him from imposing labor terms on state workers, Rauner filed an unfair labor practice charge against AFSCME. A temporary restraining order was issued by an Illinois circuit court judge blocking Rauner from forcing his terms on state workers. The temporary restraining order against Rauner requires the state of Illinois to keep the current contract terms extended until a new hearing. Rauner wants to demolish collective bargaining rights and force cuts on state workers. He's refused to sign a state budget for 2 years because the state legislature and the unions won't let him trample worker rights. AFSCME says not only is Rauner's unfair labor charge frivolous, but the $2 million a day that he claims AFSCME's legal action is costing taxpayers is, quote, total fiction. The National Labor Relations Board has issued a complaint alleging that over 1,000 truckers at 280 Menards stores in 14 states have been misclassified as independent contractors instead of employees. Seth Goldstein is senior business representative with the Office and Professional Employees International Union, Local 153 in New York.
Well, this is the first time that I'm aware of that the NLRB has decided that misclassifying employees constitutes a deprivation of union rights and is a violation of the National Labor Relations Act. In a sense, it constitutes a more activist role by the board as far as making sure that all employees are included under the National Labor Relations Act. I think that it moves our ability to organize a step further than we had previously.
With the incoming U.S. federal government likely to be hostile to organized labor, states like California could play a greater role in trying to advance labor rights. Los Angeles, for example, has already adopted a $15 an hour minimum wage. Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti says that workers still have allies in states and cities across the country who are not giving up the fight to improve workers' lives, whether they are in unions or not.
In Los Angeles, it was 600,000 people who got a raise, and most of them are not union members yet. So we know we are doing this for our brothers and sisters who don't have the luxury yet of a union, don't have that voice behind them.
Workers Independent News, provided by Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham.
Chlorpyrifos is an insecticide that was introduced by Dow Chemical in 1965. Its demise seemed to be on the horizon, but with the Trump administration's takeover of the EPA, it's uncertain whether this ban will be passed. Doctors, scientists, farmers, farm workers, and others across the country have been working to get chlorpyrifos banned because of its impact on humans, animals, and the environment. Chlorpyrifos works by blocking an enzyme that's essential for nerve cells to communicate in insects. But studies have shown that it's not just insects that are impacted by this chemical. UC Berkeley and Columbia University did studies that showed that exposure to chlorpyrifos decreased IQ and memory in 7-year-olds that were exposed to the chemical in utero. A UC Davis study found that mothers living within a mile of fields where chlorpyrifos and other organophosphate pesticides are used were 60% more likely to give birth to children with autism spectrum disorder. 93% of Americans have been shown to have evidence of chlorpyrifos in their bodies. Chlorpyrifos is currently used on a variety of organ crops, including apples, pears, cherries, sugar beets, lentils, and wheat. The EPA is supposed to make its final decision in March 2017. Public comments on the proposal are due by January 5, 2017.
While President-elect Donald Trump says border security is one of his biggest priorities, a New York Times report this week showed bribery and corruption among Border Patrol officers and agencies is rampant. The Times reported that almost 200 Department of Homeland Security employees and contractors have raked in an estimated $15 million in bribes on the job for the past decade. The Times reviewed thousands of pages of court documents for its report, which found tons of drugs and thousands of undocumented immigrants had been smuggled into the United States by federal agents on the take. Federal employees have been found guilty of selling green cards and also of leaking information to drug cartels. In one case, a federal worker tried to help murder an informant. One Homeland Security employee who spoke anonymously told the Times, quote, "It does absolutely no good to talk about the building of walls or tougher enforcement if you can't secure the integrity of the immigration system when you have fraud and corruption with your own employees," end quote.
In Morocco, mosques are taking a leadership role in the push for environmental sustainability. The Yale Climate Connection has this report.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In the North African Kingdom of Morocco, religion and technology are joining forces on a project that will reduce global warming pollution. The goal is to retrofit 600 mosques so they use more clean energy and become more energy efficient.
The project aims to equip mosques with mainly three technologies, with LED lighting, with solar water heaters, and with photovoltaic panels.
That's Jan-Christoph Kunze, principal technical advisor for the project. He says the benefits go beyond reducing pollution. In fact, the effort was developed to increase public awareness of energy efficiency and to create jobs in Morocco. The project is already creating jobs in engineering, manufacturing, and in new fields, such as energy auditing. Retrofitting any public buildings would have provided the same benefits, but Kunze says the team deliberately chose to start with mosques.
Mosques play a quite central role in the social life of many Moroccan people.
The idea is that when the Moroccan people see the benefits, they will be inspired to invest in the same solutions for their own homes and businesses, creating even larger environmental and economic benefits. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. Learn more at yaleclimateconnections.org.
This week, the United States refused to block a UN Security Council resolution that condemned Israel's expanding settlements in the West Bank. The vote resulted in a war of words between U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu over Netanyahu. FSRN's Nell Abram has more.
The fallout after the U.S. refused to veto an otherwise unanimous U.N. Security Council resolution condemning Israeli settlements escalated this week. In a strong rebuke of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Secretary of State John Kerry harshly criticized Israeli settlement expansion and moves to legalize outposts that he said have all but sealed the fate of a two-state solution to the Mideast conflict. In a speech Wednesday, Kerry staunchly defended the U.S. decision to abstain from the vote, paving the way for the international body to pass a resolution calling Israeli settlements in Palestinian territory a flagrant violation of international law.
Regrettably, some seem to believe that the U.S. friendship means the U.S. must accept any policy, regardless of our own interests, our own positions, our own words, our own principles, even after urging again and again that the policy must change. Friends need to tell each other the hard truths, and friendships require mutual respect.
Kerry was deeply critical of what he called the seemingly endless occupation, detailing the intricacies of the Mideast conflict and its effects on the Palestinian people, and proposing six principles to guide a peace process going forward. He also reiterated calls for Palestinian leaders to end all violence and incitement. Ultimately, he stood by the move at the UN, saying there was nothing new in the language and that the rapid expansion of settlements imperils the feasibility of a two-state solution.
And we cannot properly defend and protect Israel if we allow a viable two-state solution to be destroyed before our own eyes. And that's the bottom line. The vote in the United Nations was about preserving the two-state solution. That's what we were standing up for. Israel's future is a Jewish and democratic state, living side by side in peace and security with its neighbors. That's what we are trying to preserve for our sake and for theirs.
Israel responded to the UN resolution by dialing back diplomatic ties to 10 of the 14 countries who voted for the measure and accusing the U.S. of orchestrating the move, despite having long used its Security Council veto power to prevent the passage of similar resolutions. The abstention this time sparked the ire of Prime Minister Netanyahu, who alleges that Washington actually orchestrated the UN move.
Israelis do not need to be lectured about the importance of peace by foreign leaders.
Netanyahu called Kerry's speech deeply disappointing.
In a speech ostensibly about peace between Israelis and Palestinians, Secretary Kerry paid lip service to the unremitting campaign of terrorism that has been waged by the Palestinians against the Jewish state for nearly a century. What he did was to spend most of his speech blaming Israel for the lack of peace by passionately condemning a policy of enabling Jews to live in their historic homeland and in their eternal capital, Jerusalem.
The Israeli leader skirted the settlement issue, saying Israel remains committed to peace achieved through direct negotiations. The UN resolution calls for a complete halt to settlement activities, but Israeli authorities show no sign of slowing the pace. According to the Israeli daily Haaretz, the municipality of Jerusalem was set to consider nearly 500 construction permits this week. But just ahead of Kerry's speech, Netanyahu postponed the approval process and later said Israel looks forward to working with President-elect Donald Trump and to eventually repealing the UN resolution.
That was FSRN's Nell Abram.
China has announced that all domestic ivory trade will be banned by the end of 2017. This new ban is a huge step in stopping the rapid decline of African elephant populations. African elephants are not the only species targeted for ivory poaching. Other animals are the Amur leopard, Amur tiger, Bengal tiger, the black rhino, green turtle, hawksbill turtle, and the Indian elephant. There's been an international ban on ivory trade since 1989, but under these laws, pre-1989 ivory can still be sold in some countries. Illegal poaching and trade has been able to flourish under the guise of legal trade. China is one of the three largest end markets for ivory products. The United States and Hong Kong are the other largest markets. The United States enacted an almost complete ban on commercial trade in ivory from African elephants in June. The World Wildlife Fund estimates that 20,000 elephants were poached in the last year. In Mozambique, a study reported that half the country's population of elephants have been killed in the last 5 years. It's estimated that 415,000 African elephants remain today, compared to 3 to 5 million in the early 20th century.
With air pollution reaching dangerous levels in Spain, the city of Madrid has instituted rules to cut auto traffic in half. The new rules require that odd and even-numbered vehicles will alternate days on the roads of the Spanish capital until smoke levels decrease. The restrictions are in effect daily between 6:30 a.m. and 9 p.m. and will be reevaluated daily depending on pollution levels. Madrid Mayor Marta Higueras said, quote, "It's not about traffic restrictions, but about the important issue of public health," end quote. With 3.2 million residents and 1.8 million cars, Madrid suffers frequent bouts of dangerous air pollution. The banning of half the cars is the third level on a scale of four anti-pollution measures being taken. Level four bans taxis from the city, except those that are hybrid cars. You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032.